Ah, the human experience, with our flaws, our passions, our triggers, our inspirations, and our imprints. If we could see behind everyone's story, then perhaps what we would have is deep compassion. In this podcast, I get the chance to explore these stories from some truly fascinating people in some honest and heartwarming conversations. And best of all, I get to share these discussions with you. I'm Lael Stone, and this is Humans Being. Welcome to Humans Being with Lael Stone. I'm so happy to have you here. So my humanness this week that I've been sitting with and contemplating is about imposter syndrome, which is something that you may relate to, may not. And in my world, I think the imposter syndrome, it used to be pretty loud actually many years ago when I was sitting in this space, whether it was like the parenting space or even talking about mental health, talking about just well-being, talking about emotional awareness. There was a part of me that felt like I'd had lots of lived experience because I'd done it. But there was also a part of me that felt a little bit like an imposter. And mainly that was around the fact that I don't have any degrees. I've never been to university. I have probably learned all the things I talk about and my craft through actually doing. And I've come to realize that that is probably the way that I learn best is through lived experience, by listening to people's stories. I'm a big fan of doing the apprenticeship. So finding someone who's doing what you like or where, you know, what you, someone that you admire and following their path or learning from them. You know, I'm a big fan of listening to the ones that have walked before us. But every so often a little bit of an imposter part of me comes up. And it's interesting to kind of navigate those feelings there because I know that I can stand in this place and I know that it's important to share my take on how I view things or my lived experience. But our world really, really values often all the paper and the degrees and all the boxes that we tick to say this is what makes you worthy or now you're qualified to speak about it. And there is a place for that, there is no doubt. But sometimes that pops up in my world and I'm like, oh, isn't that interesting that it is still there? And it's not as loud as what it used to be, but occasionally it pops up. And I think I've learned to just trust that I do it a different way. And there's lots of people who do it a different way. And in this day and age, I think there is so much magic that we can learn from the internet, from podcasts, from books, from listening to other people talk. There's not just one way. And I do love that because I think lived experience has such an important place in the world. So I wonder if any of that resonates with you. I wonder if those imposter stories come up. And it even doesn't have to be about degrees or qualifications. It can just be when you find yourself in a space and think, how did I get here? Or all of a sudden people want to hear what you've got to say. I mean, I know a lot of people sometimes I work with just go, I feel like I'm making it up. And sometimes I feel like I'm making it up as well. So I'm in good company sometimes with that. But I wonder for you, if the imposter syndrome does pop up, what it is that you need to hear, what is it that you need to tell yourself to connect into trusting that you are exactly where you need to be. So that's my musings for today, my humanness. Now, today I am joined by an amazing woman who, if I could choose, could I come and live in your house for a week? I'm going to choose her because I just want her to cook for me. It's what I think about every time I see her pop up on Instagram. I'm like, can I come to your house and just eat all your food for the week? So I am with the amazing Sarah Pound. Welcome, Sarah. Sarah is a nutritionist. She's a recipe writer, an author, a content creator, and a mother. She's known as Wholesome by Sarah, and she has over 1 million followers, which is just mind-blowing, isn't it, when you think about that many people? Yeah. And Sarah's main focus is on removing guilt and pressure around food. And I'm going to be really transparent here, Sarah. I am not a person that loves cooking. And I think that's probably because being a young mum and having to put food on the table every night and, you know, having to just do it really, really quickly, I was just like, ah, just eat something. And I've married a man who is European and food is his love language, right? So I'm like, you married the wrong woman, totally married the wrong woman. And he's always like, you don't put any love into your food. I'm like, I ain't got time for love, mate. I like food on the table. So if you need a meal banged out in 10 minutes,
I'm your person, right? And I've managed to make it taste pretty okay over the years. But what I love about you is that you make food easy. And I'm being really transparent here. I have recipe books in my house, and the only ones I use are your two books.
Yes.
Because it's simple, but it's really tasty. And you make food feel effortless for me. So I'm just going to say my family thanks you. My family thanks you for your genius and your wisdom that my food isn't as bad anymore. So welcome. It is so beautiful to have you here.
So nice to be here. So, so exciting.
I'm wondering, as I was just talking about that imposter syndrome piece just then, is that something that you relate to? Is that something that's familiar to you?
How funny, because when you started with that and I didn't know you were going to mention it, I've always grappled with this idea of imposter syndrome because I do believe it's a thing, but I thought about this so much, but particularly with females, and that's where I try to kind of reverse it and say it doesn't have to be a thing. I think it's just sometimes for me personally, because I know the feeling, but it's probably where I feel not so much of an imposter, but more where I feel uncomfortable in the fact that I feel underconfident in whatever I'm doing at the particular time, or I'm just a bit uneducated, it's not the word, but just not experienced enough in whatever you're doing in that moment. So, because I feel like this imposter syndrome, I get why that kind of title was created, but I think it puts more pressure on people when they sort of start labeling themselves as an imposter. Mm. So for me, it's like, okay, I am exactly where I'm meant to be, but right now I just lack the experience that those two other people in the room have.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because I've sort of always had a mindset where it's like, I am meant to be here. I do feel really uncomfortable because I'm not as experienced as them, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, depending on what the environment or the experience was, I'll be like, what can I do to feel more comfortable next time in the room? Or who can I chat to? Who can I get help from? But yeah, it's not to say imposter syndrome's not a thing, because I know many, many people, particularly females, feel it. I just think it's kind of like we're all winging it, right, to some extent. Like, some people have brains wired more to being good at particular things, but I think if you're putting yourself out there in the world and you are feeling that, it's because you've never done it before, and that's okay.
I love how you reframe that. I just don't know as much, which is a beautiful thing. And I've also found when you can own that, and I want to learn from you, or, you know, you're not doing that fake it till you make it, but you're being honest where you are,
So
much better.
Doesn't yeah.
Because otherwise it just, yeah.
And that's, I feel like I always think about this with, again, females. I'll probably refer to females a lot, but just because I am a feminist and I do think we've had to take a back seat for so long, so it's hard for us to be, particularly in the business world, put in situations where I often think males have had that sort of like osmosis effect their whole life. They've been around business language, that perhaps had a father or a male figure in their life that has sort of naturally mentored them, so they have had more experience and more exposure to it than us women have, maybe. So, you know, it's not that you're an imposter, it's just that, you know, you're perhaps doing it for the first time, or you're not used to it, or you didn't get to do a uni degree in it, or it doesn't naturally come to you in, you know. So there are ways around that, because I feel like once you start labeling yourself as an imposter, then the whole world can kind of come caving in around every piece of uncomfortable kind of exposure, if that makes sense.
And thinking, even talking about women in business, like I have found this as well. Like, I've run my own businesses for nearly 30 years now. And I think when I think back to the younger versions of me, what I thought business was the way often men did business kind of thing too. So I think there's that piece as well ties into it. And as I've gotten older, I've realized that there is a way I do business that suits me as a woman, as a mother, and that I've managed to find my beautiful rhythm with that I don't have to do it another way. And I love, there's this beautiful quote that says, if you didn't know how it was meant to be done, how would you do it?
Mm.
I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
Because I think about, how can I do this in a way that suits Lael, that is my rhythm, not the way everybody else has done it, or that's the way a business should tell you to do it. And I found that that's actually worked really well for me, because it's in touch with my flow.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you just said, there's been kind of a way that it's been done for so long, and that has been –
much of the time by males. So, but then I often always think there's a whole world of females out there that have not ever got to do it their way or been answered to. Like, I often think of a woman as the customer now, because she was also never thought of as like that over the last 50 years. So, you know, women do things differently generally. We feel more, we talk more, we kind of, not always, but like connection with the person before you trust them or you want to do things with them. And that's so different to, you know, I've even got a business, you know, my food product business, which is mainly males as my business partners. And we're so, so different. And it works really well because we have both sides. But it's, important to keep that in mind, that I think you can do it how you do it naturally and don't feel like you have to fall into this, you know, way it's always been done.
Yeah. I love that you talk about that, having conversations, because connection is such a huge part of me. And my thing is like, I need to feel you. Need to feel you before I'm even going to enter into anything with you. I'm like, how we go? And I find it very tricky, or I kind of can't work with people who are just a bit more closed off, or that, and I'm just like, nah, I'm like, I want, tell me your trauma, tell me about your upbringing, like, let's connect on this level, because then I'm going to be like, I can feel you, puts me forward. And that's important to me. I find that's where I do the best work, you know, when you have those connections.
Yes.
Speaking of business stuff, so I know that Wholesome by Sarah, or just that whole business stuff, really was born out of COVID, because you had your business before that, and then when COVID happened and everything just went to crap. Tell us a little bit about that, about how that came about. And that's been a pretty amazing quick expansion of what you're doing. How's that been for you?
I know. It's been a whirlwind of 5 years now, which is kind of weird to think COVID was, you know, I mean, started 5 years ago, but yes, it's sort of, I had a catering company for 8 years and then COVID hit. And I mean, you can look at it now as a silver lining, but at the time it was not at all, because I'd worked my damn ass off for 8 years to try and get to where I wanted to be. And I felt like at that stage, right before COVID hit, I was kind of getting there. You know, my goal was always private property weddings all down, like throughout Victoria, but, you know, down where I live, Mornington Peninsula, all of that. And I'd sort of just started to tick away at that. And then all of a sudden we had like 30 locked in the diary. And then, no joke, about 6 weeks later, COVID hit. So it was just a bit of, and as everyone, you know, and I do always have to say this, that there were people way worse than me throughout COVID. I often think of the hospital scenarios, so that people couldn't visit their loved ones. So when I talk about COVID and say it was a really, really, you know, rough time of my life, I do understand that there was much, much worse in terms of family, love, all of that sort of stuff. But I had also been working at this business for 8 years. I'm, as I've already mentioned, a massive feminist with three daughters that wants to show them how to carve their own path and, you know, be able to get there. And then it pretty much all turned to shit within a year. So I had two lease spaces in Melbourne that were just like pouring money out of me. I had to let go of many, many staff. And it was sort of that, as everyone experienced that lived in Victoria, it was the unknown. So you didn't know what was around the corner. You sort of, and I'm a big planner and a goal setter. I feel like since COVID, I haven't really set any goals, because I feel like that just crushed them all, you know. So that all came crumbling down. I had my second daughter, Penny, in that time. And then it was in the second year of COVID, towards the end, that we were still shut down, because our business was people in the homes as well. And remember, you know, we had all those silly 0 days, and you couldn't have one person in your damn home and all that sort of jazz. So it's where I just sort of was like, I was really getting, I don't want to say depressed, but I was just super flat. I kind of was like, everything I've worked so hard to achieve has just gone to shit.
It must have been such a big grief.
Yeah, I do feel like I realized at the time. So I was just in survival mode, and you learn some wonderful things about yourself when, you know, I've read that a million times, that in really hard times you'll learn the best and the worst things about yourself. But I learned that I'm a real fighter and I am quite determined. So I just kept somehow, like, it'll turn around, just keep tracking away. And we were doing take home meals at the time, because that's all we could do, which were making us no money, but it was allowing my staff to work but just keeping my mind busy. And then when that sort of exhausted itself, that's when I kind of was like, I think I'm just going to start an Instagram and go out and buy a new camera, that a good camera that I can't afford, and watch some YouTube videos, learn how to use it and start. It was when Instagram Reels were just starting to come out, and I saw a little opportunity there that I think these are going to be big. And so it was a matter of going out and just starting like that. It was posting, I posted 30 days of recipes to kind of keep my mind ticking, to give me something to do. Pano at that stage was about one. So that's how it kind of all started.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And do you, like, at where you're sitting now and you look back on that and you think about the reach you're having and where it's at, does that kind of blow your mind?
It does. Wow. Like, yeah, my it's not like you get used to it. I think now I'm a bit like, okay, yeah, but every now and then my husband will say to me, you know, that's like 10 MCGs that are filled.
Like, yeah, when you think about like that, it's pretty bloody weird.
It's weird, isn't it, when people recognise you or come up and say hello to you and stuff. Or someone said to me something about the other day and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, I shared about that. And then it's a weird thing.
Yeah, really weird. I really love when people come up to me. I just find it because the connection is food, which I really, really love. So I always say it'd be much harder for lifestyle talent or influencers, which is not me at all. I've got my audience because I create, you know, recipes and food. So I love it because people will come up and tell me their favorite recipe, tell me how they use it in their, you know, family, or tell me how their kids are suddenly eating veggies, which I love. So, yeah, but it is a very weird thing because it also happens in the weirdest of places when you don't expect it at all. It's like someone, you know, when you're away somewhere interstate or whatever, and someone will come up and say some lovely things and they walk away and you think, oh, wow, didn't expect that.
I was buying petrol the other day. And the person in front of me was buying petrol. I'm just standing there. And then they finished paying, they turned around, they went, oh, my God, I love you. And I was like, okay, the other people are like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm not really in anybody. But she was just like, oh, my God, I love you. Sorry. Oh, sorry, sorry, I let you buy petrol. And I was like, that's really beautiful. It's
very, yeah, like it just happens in some, and then like some lovely, one of my favorites that happened not that long ago, I was on a plane, a flight up to Sydney or and the air hostess walked past and said, hi, Sarah. And I went, hi, hi. And we had a tiny chat, but she had to keep going. And then on my way out, she actually said that her daughter had, like, fell in love with food again, was very, very ill with an eating disorder and found me in COVID, and now her daughter's thriving. And anyway, I just burst into tears and then had to keep moving because there was a line of 30 people behind us. And I'll never see her again. Like, it's just a lovely... That's what I also really love about it. Like you get these quick little beautiful stories that people get out of what I do, and that's like super special.
It is so beautiful. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that is nuts about the world, whether it's AI, whether it's technology, but there's also some absolute beauty in the connections, isn't there?
Yeah.
Most random of ways.
Yeah.
You know how it comes about.
Yeah.
I know that one of your big things is to kind of remove the guilt around food, around cooking, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, guilt is such an interesting topic, isn't it? Because I reckon as soon as you become a mother, you just go, oh, yeah, just give me the guilt.
I'm used to, like, yeah, the lower shoulders.
Which is, again, I think something that we need to work through or look at and find a way to process that. How do you navigate, you know, being this amazing working woman, building all these incredible businesses, and then you have another role as mum, right? And I know that you guys share kind of 50-50 care of your kids. But how's that been for you navigating that role as mother and also as, you know, businesswoman? Like, where does that sit for you?
It's, I read somewhere once, like, usually if you're doing well at one, you're doing shockingly at the other. That often happens. I'm still working it out. I try to do my best at both, but I feel like you can't always give, you know, and the saying goes, you can't fill from an empty cup. So I try to look after myself as well, but there's just so much going on that it's like you can't do all of it well all the time. And that's where I think with kids, support comes in, and that might, you know, that might be a partner, that might be a family member, that might be kinder, daycare, whatever it is. I could not do, and I say this all the time, really honestly, because people are like, how do you do what you do? My girls are basically in Monday to Friday care. So, you know, I think sometimes people think that I'm working full time alongside having them around my feet the whole day. And I have that, you know, one day a week with my youngest and I barely get anything done. So it's, yeah, that they're kind of,
and they're happy where they are and they're secure and they're supported throughout the week, that I'm able to then do what I can do. But yes, my husband and I are 50-50. I'm really big on that. But that is also our individual setup. Like, it's really hard because I talk about this a lot about, when dad's really pays, because dad, Bash, my husband's name is Tom, but I call him Bash. I get told how lucky I am all the time because I have him, because he does drop-offs and pickups and he's present in our girls' lives. And I get super pissed off about it because I'm like, what? Like, we both work full time. We both chose to have these children. He's also like, it's this expectation that because he does as much as me, then he's, we've got to put him up on a pedestal and he's the best thing to look up to. And I just feel like I'm like, we're 2025. Like, can that just be somewhat normal now? Because of the, and I get that every situation is different and it's not easy. Even I look at my girlfriends and, they've got partners that have to leave at 6:30 in the morning and, tradie jobs, things like that, that it can't work, that they share drop-offs, blah, blah, blah. But it's also like when we see it happening within a couple like Tom and I, for example, does it have to be so special that he's doing just as much as me?
It is an interesting thing, isn't it? Like, I've definitely seen it shift. Like, I've worked in the kind of birth parenting space for like over 20 years now, and I've definitely seen a shift of, well, there's so many more hands-on dads now. There's a lot more of that split. There's even some dads that, are the primary caregiver, and depending on each family, like, I think it's about what works for you. But I remember feeling really pissed off when my kids were younger, and I remember Mike took all three kids to the park once, and some woman's, yeah, to him, oh God, aren't you a good dad? I'm like, I do that every day,
and I get no praise for it.
Comes up to me and goes, you're great. I mean, and he also got it. He goes, yeah, it's crazy. There's a double standard within it. And, I think that hopefully society's catching up and we're realizing that, you're right. We both choose to have these children. And how do we all get our needs met? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a big thing for me in families. Like, how do we all get our needs met? You've got desires and careers you want to build, and so does your partner, and like, how do we make it all work as a whole? And I think it's when we can do it well and when we can support each other within it, it's good. It's amazing. But there's that dance often that happens in parenting, especially when we've got a lot of stress on around who's doing it tougher. Like, I'm doing that. And in the early days, it just becomes, in the early days of when we had kids, my husband was the kind of main breadwinner, and I was at home with the children. I had my little businesses on the side, and we often used to fight against who was doing it tougher. And, and I'd be like, I'm at home with the kids all day. And he's like, I'm at work all day. And it really did create a whole lot of tension, which was really a highlight that none of us were actually getting our needs met at all. And we would just bring that edge together.
As you call it, keeping score.
Yeah, it's totally.
And you said this years ago, but like the scale of 0 to 10 of like, when you're coming home or you've had a day with, and we work together now. So again, we have a very kind of unique setup that we do most, we're like one person, but it's sort of like we now work together most of the time anyway. So it's different, but that leaving of the house and coming home, whether you've been at home with the kids all day, man or woman, or you've been out working or whatever, and you sort of give that score of, oh, I'm a 2 tonight. Like, I just can't manage it. And I've taken little pieces like that from you over the years. And the other one I love is that the keeping score part, it's so easy to do, but it doesn't help at all. So even our one-year-old, I never believed, I have to say this because so many mums out there will be like, oh yeah, duh. But our elder two never had a sleep regression. They were just unreal. Like, and I knew that at all through the times. Like, they loved the routine. So did Tom and I, because we're working full time always. But my little one, Elia, has just literally not slept for 6 weeks. And she's 16 months old. So I didn't even think regressions happened after 1 year old. So we've gone back to newborn stage. She's literally slept through the last 5 nights. So I'm like, you little angel. Yeah. But in that time, because we didn't expect it and we thought we were through the trenches, we started to do the whole, like, we'd both get up to her at separate nights. Tonight's your night, tonight's your night, unless we both had something full on for work. But in the morning, it would be like, oh, how many times did you get up? And the other person was, oh God, I was up 4 times and it was so full on. She wouldn't go to sleep for an hour and a half. And right away, you started your day with this tension of like, I'm doing it tougher. I'm doing it harder than you are at the moment. And we just said in the end, I was like, I'm sorry, I just can't. Can we just try and be good to each other? Because it's not any of our faults that she's not sleeping. We're doing our best.
Yes.
And when we wake up each day and you're telling me that you were up four times and you were sitting there patting the bloody back, you know, outside her cot for an hour, it doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't set my day up for success. Like, it actually just punches it right into the ground from the very get-go.
So, and it's so interesting, isn't it? Because what it does, it's this unconscious thing that was not unconscious. We're saying it, but actually really what's behind it is I am tired.
Yeah.
I really need some acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Like, actually that's the vulnerability, but we do this. I mean, we had, my husband's probably going to kill me, but he probably won't listen to this. We had this scenario because we've really switched roles in the last 2 years, right? And so he used to kind of earn all the money. I was with the kids, and now we've really switched. So, I'm doing the majority of that. He still works and supports me, but he takes care really of the house, and the kids don't really need him to take care of them because they're adults. I mean, he probably got the sweet deal.
Yeah, that's the same. It's like he's got to know the little people to look after.
But we had this thing the other day, which you'll so appreciate. I had had a crazy day. I was doing a consult with someone. I had a class I had to teach. I had to go to a board meeting, and then I had to race home and do a presentation online, right? So I was like, quick, quick, quick. And I'd said to him, could you have dinner ready when I get home so I can quickly eat and do the thing, right? So he's like, yeah, I'm going to make my bolognese or something. So he literally spent all day, like 6 hours cooking this soup. He loves when he cooks to talk to the food, right? He's like, you treat it like a woman. It's like, and so he'll say, I mean, it's so cute, when you're making bolognese, he goes, you go up and you tell it it's beautiful, right? So it's really beautiful. I mean, it's funny. And he's like, the time is going to go off, go stir the sauce. Did you say nice things to it? And I'm like, anyway, he's passionate, like he's pouring his love into the food. Right? He pours the love in that I don't. So he's pouring the love into the food. And I'm doing that manic day, do this meeting, do this thing, da, da, da. Anyway, I get home, my meeting ran over time. I've literally got 10 minutes to eat before I've got to jump onto this presentation. And I walk into the kitchen and I can't believe I did this. I just kind of stood there tapping my foot, like waiting for it to be ready. Like I didn't realize at the time because I was just stressed.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there like this. And he's like trying to serve it up. And I'm like, okay, thanks. And I grabbed it and I literally went downstairs to my office and ate it, right? Like scoffed it down. And then I jumped on my call. And then when I got off the call, came upstairs and he was really just a bit cold. And I was like, what's going on? Anyway, we went to bed. And the next morning we wake up and he's still a little bit funny. And I'm like, what's wrong? And we're sitting at the kitchen bench and he goes, you didn't thank me for the dinner. I poured my heart into the dinner and you didn't even thank me. And I, like, you know, just to be human here, I'm usually pretty measured. I was like, I was working all day. I am like, I am busting my ass for this family. And I am like in full, like, yeah, you know, we're literally playing the game. He's doing it tougher, but in roles reverse. And he and I, like, wanted to reach over the table and just be like, it's just your bolognese.
It's gone real.
But he was like, I have put so much effort into this. And it, I mean, we both stopped. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And we both apologized to each other. And then we kind of laughed about it. But I was like, we have had this total switch, right? And it really, I actually said what it has made me appreciate. And I think it's made him appreciate it too. And like, no job is harder than the other.
Yeah.
There's a pressure earning money. There's a pressure of like, the next gig, paying the bills, staff, all the kind of stuff,
yeah,
that has its pressure. And then when I was in the trenches of raising little kids, that's massive, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're both bringing something to it. And when we don't appreciate each other in it, that's where it gets really messy. And it was such a, I mean, it's kind of funny. It was a bit cute.
It's funny now. But at the time.
I cannot believe how mad I got because I was like, what was going on for me is I don't feel appreciated. I don't feel seen. He was saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so those
did a different form. Like,
you need to have a little reset around that. So literally, he's amazing. You love his cooking. It's very good. Anyway, it's got full of love. Full of love.
I love that he talks to it. That's the best.
So with your love of food and stuff, was that an imprint for you and your family? Like, was food a source of celebration? Was it something that was like?
Yeah. Mum's a very good cook.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm one of five kids,
yeah,
and we did get the luxury of her cooking a meal from scratch every single night, which obviously was more common, you know, 38 years ago.
Yeah.
But, and comes down to that, you know, breadwinner role and the stay at home mum role. But that was where I think it was a natural passion that was just part of my personality, but then it was brought out in the sense that, you know, mum cooked every night. So I watched, I helped at times, got involved. And then it just kind of started from there. Mm-hmm. So I had a natural love for food and cooking, but then the nutrition health side also came into it when I was a little bit older, more out of just being interested in how food can kind of fuel your body and what it can do for you and energy and all of that sort of stuff. And that's where it kind of, all stemmed from.
Beautiful. Because those imprints that we have in our family of origin often so can set up some beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Food is such, it can just hold so much weight in the sense of, pardon the pun, around our relationship to food, right? Especially if we grew up in families where you had to eat everything on your plate, where we were judged for the way we looked or even the basic imprints. And this is something my husband and I talk about. Food was not a thing in my family growing up. It was literally fuel. That was it. So we would have steamed vegetables, but not even salt on them. Boiled
it.
Yeah. And chops.
Yeah.
We had the same thing on Wednesday night. You know, I laugh when I say to my husband, he's European. I'm like, we never ate pasta growing up.
Oh, yeah, negligent week. Yeah.
No, pasta wasn't even a thing.
Totally.
Like food was just bland. There was no love in it.
Yeah,
it's no love in my food. I'm good at many things, but probably not as good as other things. It wasn't even an imprint that was like, this is a source of celebration or it's a coming together. It's something that's beautiful. Whereas my husband had that and that's what he's kind of introduced into our family, this love of food. And it's so funny when my kids are adults now, we sit around and we talk about memories. Most of the memories are related to food.
Went
to that restaurant.
Yeah.
Remember that place there? Remember when you made this thing? It is such a forum for people to connect and come together, isn't it?
Yes, and so true. I feel like the relationship people have with food is so different person to person.
Yeah.
And it can be, and that was one thing my parents did beautifully, is that there was never, I've got an older brother, but then three younger sisters, so four girls in the family. And there was never any kind of guilt related to food, you know, in terms of connection with weight or, you know, and that's, I find as well, nutritionists and dietitians I've met along the way, and they're quite open about it, but their fascination for what they do now came out of things like eating disorders and things like that. It was that kind of real focus on food to the point that it was controlling your whole life. Whereas I come from a totally different world of, it was never connected to guilt or what you look like in the mirror. It was just, we all eat as a family every night, which we try to do with our three girls. It doesn't always happen because, you know, work and life, it all gets in the way. But Tom and I are really big on at least 4 to 5 nights a week, and they're little still. So it's, you know, you've got to, but we'll sit up at the table together, ask how your day was, what happened that was funny today, you know, and that doesn't have to happen every night because obviously it sounds super corny and whatever, but it is that whole, that's where you kind of form those connections with food from, as you say, with your three. It's sort of, oh my God, remember that time we went to that beautiful lunch? Oh my God, that funny story. And it's often food that's brought you guys together or the excuse to at least bring, you know, you guys together. So I think, it means so much to, it just means lots of different things to different people, but that's how I try to view it, that it's wonderful fuel for our bodies to be out. And that's how I talk to my little ones about it, like so that you can get up and play and go to daycare and kinder and run around with your mates. And that's in its simplest form, age appropriate, what food is. And it's, but as you grow, you realize it is form of connection and catching up with, like tonight I'm having dinner with my best mate. I don't live in the city. Haven't seen her for months. She's pregnant for the first time. And I'm like, how lovely. We're going to have a beautiful meal, glass of wine. And it does. It's like a really nice way to just bring people together. Because I feel like, even though I'd love exercising, I feel like it was like, hey, do you want to go for a walk? I'd be like, oh, I moved house yesterday. I can't afford going for a walk. I'm not doing that. But give me a nice bowl of pasta and a glass of wine.
Where to my heart. Yeah. And do you know what I'll say to you though? We made it a point of eating together when our kids are little, and that is still something we do.
Yeah.
Unless one of the kids or someone's working, every night we get down and we sit and we have a meal, and it lasts for like an hour because we eat and we just talk. And it is, and I know that this point in our lives is about to change because my kids are all about to go traveling and move out and all sorts of different stuff. So we've got this really beautiful window where they're adults. And every night someone cooks, so it's not just me, like someone cooks each night of the week. So they prepare the meal, we all sit and eat, we talk about it. It is kind of, I think, what we all hope for when we're parents, of that beautiful connection. And it has become something very, very sacred. And it does kind of shock me sometimes when my kids' friends would come over and we'd sit and we'd eat and we'd talk and they'd be like, oh my God, I just get my dinner and go and eat in my room every night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, which I know all families, different stuff, but I feel like there is something when we can honor it and bring the sacredness to it. It's such a beautiful place to meet.
Yeah.
There, isn't it?
And also it is not easy as in like it's the easy way out, but if you've got young kids and life is hectic, it's very easy to make dinner and leave the TV on. Mm. But I think it's quite hard to go, because I'm not saying we don't have TV in our house. We have lots of TV in our house. But Lil will often be watching TV and I'll sort of go, I'll finish dinner and I'm so tired and I'll think, oh, she can just eat on the couch. I can't be bothered. And usually it's Tom, my husband, because he's quite big on traditions and things like that, and he did the same with his family. But he'll say, no, let's turn the TV off. Mm. So it just takes that extra bit of effort to go, not just switch the TV off and sit up. And every night's not going to be lovely, especially with young children. But it sort of does. I often think about my future self in 10, 20, 30 years, what I want my relationship with my girls to be like. And I think, you know, they're going to grow up and go off and leave and have lives of their own. But if we've got something like a nightly meal that we've had together, not every night, but most nights of the week, mm-hmm. I think that's something that will bring them back to me. You know, in a nice way, not every night, obviously, when they grow up, but, you know, once a week, once a fortnight, it's still that lovely connection that I think they'll miss, or I'm hoping they'll miss, but that I'll crave, that will bring us back together.
I love that. That's beautiful. And I mean, that was going to be my next question, is what are the imprints that you hope your girls have from the way you guys are raising them? What do you hope is what they just know in their being? Like, you know, we talk about an imprint of, we come together and we eat food and it's a sense of celebration, or, you know, they've watched you probably, no doubt, you know, be brave and courageous and follow your heart and business. You know, that's a beautiful imprint. They've watched a woman who can do stuff. What do you hope are the imprints that you pass on to your girls?
Oh, good question. I think for me, because I don't think I'm a perfect mum and I think I stuff it up all the time, but I think for me, I did like a values workshop about 2 years ago, and my three values came down to respect, courage, and freedom. And so when I'm a bit lost, or when I'm exhausted, or when I'm trying to think how I want to raise my girls, I'll go back to those and what that might look like in that particular scenario, kind of thing. So I think imprints wise, I would want, you know, I think a big one for me is that they've watched me be courageous and sort of, you know, just push in a female kind of business world that, you know, wasn't shown to me particularly, but that I could pass on to them. And I always think they don't have to do that. You know, they might not want to work. They might want to stay at home with children, and I will be totally fine with any of that. But I think my biggest imprint I would want them to do is just do what you want to do, in terms of not necessarily just career either. I think just try to, find your passion in whatever that looks like. And, you might not be able to do it at all parts of your life, because life can get hectic at whatever, but just do that. I think that women take a backseat so much of their lives. You know, they put so many other people first, and children and partners and family and parents and all of that sort of stuff. And I try to teach my girls that it's not selfish to also think about yourself, to also, as I say, you can't pour from an empty cup. So it's like you're allowed to want stuff too, and you're allowed to put yourself out there and go for that as well.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, you are just living this, so they're getting it.
Yeah, well, I hope. Well, that was the other one with respect. It's like Tom and I have a both ways a very respectful relationship where we care for the other, we consider the other, we have fun with the other. So that's my other biggest thing that's not so much related to career or anything, but that they have respect in their relationships that they form, whether that's friendships. I'm often like to my eldest who's 8 and she's still little, so it's age appropriate. It's not like I'm sitting her down for massive lectures, but as you know, talking about with friendship, the two-way street, how do they make you feel? Like, and it starts with stuff like that. And then, you know, whether they grow up and have a partner, boy or girl, it's like you should feel valued in that relationship. You should feel respected. What does respect look like? I hope that we're showing that to them every day.
Yeah, which so much of that is already happening because so much of them learning about relationships happens just purely by the day-to-day living, how you guys speak to each other, your kindness, your consideration. I mean, all of that is kind of infiltrating into them anyway, even without the words, you know, it's there. I wonder for you then thinking about, you know, we all have these imprints that we carry in from our childhood and some of the biggest stories that we're still having to work with. What is it in your world that you're still like, oof, this trips me up? Is it about boundaries? Is it about self-worth? Is it about saying no, saying yes? Is it about playing or finding joy? Like, what is it that you feel that you're, is one of the things that you're like, oh, I still have to keep working with that?
Yeah, a couple for sure. One would be, I think, emotional intelligence or because that was more, you know, the era that we were growing up, that I grew up in, it was quite normal for parents not to, you know, now we spend, and so much of your work obviously is spent on the emotional side of a child, and I feel like that just wasn't a thing when we were kids. So it's sort of like when I met my husband, I was just very, I just wasn't good at it. So it's taken me years to learn it, and he's been like a wonderful demonstration of what that looks like, because his emotional intelligence has always been, that's what's kind of drew me to him in the beginning. But he was always very, but we used to, you know, like things like silent treatment and stuff like that used to happen when I was a kid because it was kind of normal around that time. But so when To and I would have our, and we've been together since we were 17, so forever, but we'd sort of had these fights at 18, 19, 20, and I just shut off, wouldn't say a word. And I just, that was, you know, what I was taught, what I knew. And he was so bloody patient. I look back and, you know, there were times that he'd sit on the bed at the end of the bed for like an hour at a time. And he'd be like, I'm not going to go anywhere until you talk to me.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah. And I'd just be like, in my head, I'd be like, I've got 1,000 things to say, but I actually can't say them. So I am the opposite with my girls. It's like, let it out, cry it out, all of this sort of stuff. Obviously, there's a balance because you can't let them cry forever and you can't let them, you know, decide, I want to do that today, and then they have a tantrum and you let them do what they wanted to do, and that doesn't send the right message either. So there is a balance, and you know, Tom and I talk about that all the time, what we're doing, what we could have done better, blah, blah, blah. But I it's the more I've been surrounded by it, the more I've, you know, come across people like you who are so wonderful in that space, the more I'm like, it makes so much sense to be like that. And it's so funny now in my life because I see grown-ups that either don't have it or don't do it, and nothing against them, and you know, maybe it was the way they brought up and they never knew, whatever, for what, there's a million reasons why people aren't like that, but it's not like I look down on them, but I'm like, you're just missing out on so much. I think when you open yourself up emotionally, and you know, you can be vulnerable, and it just gives, yeah, so much opportunity for connection and deep feelings that I think we're meant to feel as humans.
We are. Like, yeah. And again, I so relate. Like, it's, we grew up in a time where behaviorism was the thing, which is that, you know, you don't get upset, you don't be sad, and you be good. We love you when you're good, and when you're bad, we kind of turn away. I mean, that was everywhere, and that was not just certain parents. Pretty much that was just the narrative of what you were told a good parent was, and a good child is a compliant child.
Oh, yes, a good girl.
Yeah, you totally. And the good girl thing is massive, but most women I work with, we're still undoing the good girl thing. Because then we don't really have good boundaries, and we're all about what does everyone else think. And it's just, it runs deep.
Yeah.
And I love hearing you say this, because I'm like, you
are being brave enough and courageous enough to do this work so your girls don't have to. You're giving them permission to be who they need to be. You're giving them permission to feel angry, let it go, cry, feel it, move on. Like, you know, you are saying yes to all of them. And I think that's what I see, just, you know, our generation of people, we're doing this massive healing work because we weren't allowed to feel.
Yeah.
And again, just a product of the time, our parents were doing the best they could, all of those kind of things. There's some really powerful work that's happening here as we shift it.
Yeah.
It's not easy though.
No, it's not easy. And also within that, you know, it comes back to the good girl thing as well, because that was everywhere in our generation, but not so much. It's not like I felt that from my parents more. You feel it from everyone around you. And it is that if the child's quiet, they're good. So, you know, then as you say, compliant. But in all the stuff I'm trying to teach my girls, it's also just that being able to speak up. So there's this massive, I feel, connotation with females that if you want to, you know, stand up and disagree or say something or have a different opinion, that you're either rocking the boat or, you know, you just and that's how I feel like most of our generation grew up, particularly females. So it's also like you can say what you want and you're not being rude. Yeah. There's a way to say it. Mm-hmm. You always need to be respectful of whoever you're talking to and wherever they come from or who they are or what their background is. But you can absolutely stand up for yourself or say, I'm not comfortable with this or I disagree, but I'm still learning that. Yeah. So it's just, that's actually what I find more difficult. Like now I feel like emotional intelligence comes pretty easy, but it's been 20 years of learning it. But yes, trying to speak up when you feel that, you know, gut feeling of like, I'm not okay with this or this doesn't suit me or whatever. It's like, how do we do that? How do we teach our kids that, you know, without them feeling like they're being rude or annoying or, you know.
It is such a big thing. That always comes up for me when I think about my teenage self. Like I so wish I had have had a version of me back then to say, this is how you say no.
Yes.
Or this is how you go, actually, that doesn't work for me. Like yeah. It's like it didn't even know it was an option.
Yeah.
You just kind of slap it up or you just kind of moved on. And that's what I feel like you feel really passionate about with my kids, of just, we used to practice lots. How do you say no? What would you do in this situation? What words could you use? Because I think we need to have a language around it, and they need to know that that is really important, you know, that they can claim that space, they can stand there. And I mean, that excites me for what they're going to do. And I see that even with my daughters, they do not take shit. Like they are just like,
not okay.
This is my boundary. They will call out stuff and I'm just like,
you're like, I created this.
Yeah, I'm in awe of them because I just think there's no way I would have ever done that at that age. And I just love that they're connected enough to themselves to be able to say those things. And that's what I just think is so magnificent, you know, and the gift as we do our own work that we can help them do that is so beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, completely. That's my hope. So you've done it. How incredible.
Well, you know, I mean, again, nobody's perfect. And my kids have all got, everyone's got their stuff right. But what I do love is that their sense of connection to themselves is strong and what their yeses and nos are.
Yeah.
They're really clear on them. And I love that. It's so powerful.
Yeah.
I wanted to just touch on about, you know, the space that you work in, particularly your beautiful books, recipes, all that kind of stuff. It probably has always been a competitive space, but it's really become a peak competitive space now, right? Like, how do you navigate that? Do you ever compare? Or do you feel, you know, it's very saturated, or do you just kind of stay in your lane and go, I'm going to do my thing? How does that land for you?
Bit of both, I think, but I always come back to stay in my own lane. I think that It's so natural to compare, and I think to some extent it's kind of healthy at times, like to look at competitors and, you know, and even this goes back to my catering days. You know, I was striving to be the best caterer in Victoria, for example, so I was looking at who was ahead of me, who'd walked the path, who was, you know, everywhere at the time. So I think there's a level of healthy competitiveness that you kind of go, oh, what's everyone doing? What are the trends? Just want to... But then if you get to, I think it's really easy, which I feel like I'm quite good at this, that don't get bogged down by what someone else in your field is doing, because it just will confuse you and it won't be authentic to what I feel like I want to do, that kind of thing, and it just will stray you. So, yeah, there are times definitely that I look at others around me and go, oh, they're doing something cool, or oh, that's really cool. But not enough to sort of, yeah, bog me down, because I think you can easily get bogged down. So it's easy just to put the blinkers on and be like, that's okay, that's them. It's not you, says. Like, you just need to keep doing what you're doing and hopefully keep coming up with ideas.
Yeah, I am so impressed with the ideas. Like, I sometimes watch you and I just think, you've got 30 days of this. And I was like, 30 slow cook things. And I'm like, what? I'm going, yes.
Yeah. I think it's taken me nearly 40 years to learn this. That isn't it funny? Like, you talk about imprints, but at school, I thought, because not that teachers directly said that I was not creative, but there were certain scenarios that came up. And, you know, back then it was sort of like creative was to do with the arts. Like, if you were good at art, for example, was my idea of if you're creative, you're good at art, and that's about it. I was never taught, or maybe I was never made aware that creative can be so many things. And I'm only learning now, and especially from Creating Wholesome by Sarah, you know, I'll get that question a lot. How do you continually come up with ideas? And my answer is that they just come up and they're just there. Yeah. And I think I'm learning, you know, as I said, nearly 40 years into my life, that I'm creative.
Yes.
So it's taken a long time for the penny to drop.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing. It's like, you know, kids are so, you think back to how that became an imprint and then how that, you know, meant so much to you along particular parts of your life. Like, oh, I can't do that, I'm not creative. Oh, no, I won't take part in that because I'm not really creative. And it's just like, that was so wrong.
Yes.
What I thought.
Yes.
So it's just trying to keep kids' minds open, I think, as well. Like, always questioning, but why do you think that? So I try to do that. Sometimes way too much, because Lily, my eldest, is like, shut the fuck up, Mum. Like, do you ever stop asking questions? And she's not a talker. So that's a real struggle for me, because I'm like, how was your day? And she's like, good. And I know most people will say that's what their children say, but that is all you get out of her ever. It's like, not even nighttime when she's trying to procrastinate going to bed, does she come up with stories? She's just like a one-word response girl, and that is it. Whereas my second is like the opposite. Okay. But, yeah, it's sort of like, keep that questioning and, you know, because it's so easy for a child to have one experience or two experiences and that it forms some, you know, mindset or belief in their brain that then they can carry for such a long time.
You're so right. Like, it's those offhanded comments that we get at school. You're not very smart. You're never gonna be a good learner. You're not creative. Like, they land.
Yeah.
And, I work a lot with educators and I say to them all the time, you have to be mindful of your words. They'd have so much power, and you can use your influence for good or for bad.
Like,
you know, and the way you talk to a child, the way you meet them, the way you help or support them has just long-lasting impact.
Completely.
I love what you say about creativity, because you're right, there's creativity in so many different things. And I probably think it's the same too. I thought creativity was playing music or drawing.
Yes, you're drawing
crap at. Like, you know, those kind of things. Yeah.
Still crap at drawing, your stick figures everywhere.
Yeah. But I'm a bit like you. I'm a super creative person, but it's in the work that I do, and it comes up with new ideas or just stuff like that. And it's that thinking, oh, if I could do this, I could do that. And I love that you say they just come to me, because to me that's just when you're in your flow, right? It's often, for me, my best creative ideas always come in the shower. When I'm driving, I'm just like, I have long showers.
Yeah.
I'm like, do this, I could do that.
Shower for me, journey.
It's amazing, because, and it's sometimes, you know, when you've got to do a new project or something and there's this in between where it hasn't dropped in yet. And I have now reached a point in my life where I get excited, when's it going to drop in? When is the idea going to land? Because there's something bubbling, but it hasn't quite landed yet.
Yeah.
And then when it lands, you're like, yes.
Got it. It's a dish.
Yeah. That's magical, isn't it? Like, it used to stress me a bit, but now you're like, oh.
It'll come. You almost need to trust the yes.
Has to trust.
Yeah.
Have to trust.
Yeah. And I also find as well, shower for me, but also if I allow, which is tricky with three children, but generally my three girls are pretty good sleepers. And I've got to be better at not jumping on my phone first minute that I wake up, because if I get a bit of quiet time, like I'll wake up and lay in bed, and if no one else is awake and I don't touch my phone, that's also when I can get some really time. Fabulous kind of, that's what I'm going to do today. Or, I should also, you know, and that's where some ideas can really land. Yeah. But often I'll pick up my phone straight up and I'll be like, oh, I shoot off that email that I didn't do last night, check Instagram, do that, and then it's destroyed.
It's like you need to have 15 minutes non-negotiable dreaming time in the morning, right, to just to allow those things to drip through, because it's so important, isn't it?
It's so important. And, yeah, obviously with phones and technology, we don't get anywhere near enough of it. But when you do, it's, it's a pretty wonderful feeling.
You strike me as a woman that, I mean, you have amazing success and you're doing really beautiful things, but you strike me as a woman that would champion other women, that would, you know, be happy for their success and just be like, go. Like, and I think sometimes too, what I sometimes see in spaces is that when we're brave enough to take risks and steps and all that kind of stuff, you know that you'll win no matter what you do, even if it doesn't land, because you're brave enough to give it a go, right? For you, you know, whether it's just with friends, other women, you know, or anybody who's putting something out there creatively, does it sit for you in a place where you're like, hell yeah, go?
Yeah.
Because I sometimes see a lot of competition where we can get triggered by what others are doing. Like, where does that sit for you?
100%. Whenever I try to encourage, and it's funny you say that, because I've said to my husband, and sort of I've said it before, but I will one day work with women in trying to put themselves first. I just know it, because it's just in my belly. It's always there, but I know I'm not particularly ready for it yet. And I'm like, that's fine. That time will come. It might be in 5 years. It might be in 10 years. So when I see, even with my three sisters, with girlfriends, I'm like, oh, just give it a crack. But I need to be careful, because I do really love this about myself, that I don't worry about giving something a go and failing, because I think failing's a shit word, but giving something a go and it not working out the way that you wanted it, because I've sort of figure, I don't know why I don't. And that would also come down to my parents. My dad always put himself out there, had small businesses. He was similar like that, that he would always just say, who gives a shit what people think? As long as you obviously care about the people that you love and that, you know you and support you, you care about what they think. But for the people that are sitting out there having a go like, oh, my God, what's she doing? She started this thing. It seems so lame, all of that. I'm like, oh, that is so your own shit that just needs to be sorted. So I'm a massive advocate for any female just trying to do whatever. And it can look, you know, it can be a million things, but it's, yeah, we don't do it enough. We always, as I said before, take the back seat, put everyone else first, think, oh, I can't do that. Like it's such an important thing to look at your life and say, you know, even a friend of mine who's recently come through breast cancer, she talks about before she had the cancer, being the backseat driver. And she was like, you know, she had her two kids, her partner, her friends, her parents. And she was like, that was all I ever knew and that was what I did. And she was like, the wonderful gift out of the cancer is that it like shook it up for me and was like a bit of a knock in the face of like, you get one shot at this life, one shot. And if you're thinking about doing the thing, and she's created this wonderful skincare brand called Fuka, but and sorry, I didn't mean to just plug her there, but she's so incredible because it's come out of something that was so terrible, but she's seen an opportunity and also given herself this wonderful life message of you actually do get one shot at this. So give it a crack. If it does not work out, it's not the end of the world. And if it does not work out, you will learn something from it. You'll learn either about yourself or something along the journey that you will be able to carry into whatever you're going to do next, the next chapter. Yeah, you might lose some money. Yeah, you might lose a little bit of self-confidence along the way. But I think putting yourself out there is so brave. And, yeah, if it doesn't work out, what's your next thing?
That's exactly it. Speaking my language, I have always said you will win just because you said yes.
Yeah,
you mean to go.
Yeah.
And
you know, everything teaches us. Nothing is wasted. Nothing is wasted in the big journey of everything you've done and tried. It all comes to these moments, and all those skills and tools and challenges and all those kind of things sit there as just beautiful wisdom if you can tap into it to do it. So I agree with you. I'm like a big champion of people giving us stuff a go, giving it a try. Like I'm probably a bit like you. I've always just jumped into stuff. I don't know, we'll give it a go. We'll see if it'll work out. Like I'm just
not really have a plan. Yeah, I was never a business plan kind of gal.
Totally like that. I'm like, oh, this is a good idea. Let's do it.
Yes.
Which I know terrifies some people, but I'm like, I will learn something no matter what. And hey, it may work. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I think that championing that in others is, I just think, so important and vital to give them those little, that little extra push or just like, yes, go, give it a go.
Learnings. And, you know, people can look at Wholesome by Sarah, for example, now and be like, wow, you know, look what you've built and whatever. I could not have done that without 2 pounds, with which, if you look at it, I know you could say COVID destroyed it, but, you know, technically failed, if we want to look at the word fail. Mm-hmm. It was a business that was, you know, running to the ground to the point that we had to close our doors. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much out of that 8 years, and definitely in the tricky times too. So if it leads to that, you learn so much about yourself and about other people mm-hmm. as well. I think that's really important, the people you work with and you know, what they bring and who you are as a person. But it's sort of like, I would not have been able to do Wholesome by Sarah without having that whole experience, which you could easily look at and say, what a wasted 8 years, because nothing ever came from it in terms of the business side of things or being able to sell it or make money or whatever, be the caterer you always strive to be. But it's like, I could never have done with Wholesome what I have without having that.
And don't those times where you are on your knees and it feels, you know, there's no hope or what's going to happen, they are the times where we need trust more than anything, don't we? That yeah. sometimes we just have to hold a little glimmer of hope or light that there is wisdom in what we're going through. And I don't mind that they are usually the times where magic is born from those spaces.
Definitely. It's sort of like it's about to turn a corner or something's about to change. And how I always looked at it as well, which I always find so funny, but it's true, because I think it terrifies my husband, because he's just got a different personality to me. But when my business was crumbling and Wholesome hadn't started, and I thought, oh my God, everything I've worked for is coming crashing down, and what the hell am I going to do after this? And I did always come back to the idea of, if it all turns to shit, I can, and I lose my house, lose everything, I'll live in the gutter, but at least I'll have my family. So, and it might not be your partner and your kids, but there'll be someone in your life that you love or whatever. And it, you might not be living with them even, but at least you got them. So that's weirdly what always gave me a bit of comfort. Yeah. Even though, when you think about it, it's like, oh, having a toddler living in a gutter sounds great. It just somehow, it was just like, it's not the end of the world. Like, career, business stuff that you leap for is just, if it doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world. At least you gave it a crack.
You did.
Yeah.
You know, it is better to risk and try than never do it at all.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And I think that is, you know, that for me is such a really important message is be brave. You never know.
Totally.
Well, I want to thank you for having the courage and the creative magic and just the bravery to do what you do, because again, I'll just say again, you're the only person that book from. I think my family might thank you. I just love everything that you stand for, Sarah. I just think that just the light that you turn up with, just, you know, online, but the ease in what you help people do to build a beautiful relationship with food, just all that you are doing and creating. The world needs more of it, you know, as it's, the world is messy. There's a lot out there, but I think what you do and what you stand for and just your beautiful creative gifts in the world is, it is wholesome.
It is
so wholesome. It's beautiful. It makes me feel good. Every time I see you pop up, I'm like, oh, it's beautiful. So thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for just for being you in the world.
Thank you. Oh, no, I've loved it. As I should just pop this little note in the end that, when Lael contacted me, I nearly lost my marbles. I got your message. I was like, oh my God, my idol, Lael Stone, oh my God. Ran up to my husband. Like, he's like, I'm on a work call.
And I'm like, let me in. Anyway, I've loved you for so, so long. I think what you do is incredible and it's just been an absolute pleasure.
Well, it is my pleasure. And when am I coming for dinner?
Not yet. I moved house yesterday. Let me get all the boxes out of the way.
Then I'm coming over. Can I go through the book and say which one's my favorite?
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Lyle.
I so enjoyed that conversation with Sarah. And I think the thing I'm really taking away from it is how powerful our imprints around food can be. I think it's a really important conversation or something to think about. Like, what were we raised with and what are the stories that we carry around food? Because food is such a big part of our lives and the imprints that we carry with them can have an impact. And I think it's a really important thing to have to feel into around how you want that to be if you are a parent or just what you want your relationship to food to be like. I share it in this episode that I don't love cooking. It's not a thing that brings me a lot of joy, but I must admit, and I didn't say this, that over 25 years of cooking family meals for my children, it brings me warmth when I see them all around the table together, whether it's, you know, celebrating what I've cooked or not. It's really around just being together and the beauty of that, the beauty of connecting. I find that it's really wholesome. It's beautiful. And I also really just loved talking about, I think, the roles that we play, particularly as women, particularly in business. You know, I think one of the things I feel really passionate about is about celebrating women, particularly about having a go, putting their dreams out there, being creative, giving it a crack. I think it's such an important thing. I think it's something we need to celebrate in each other, not tear each other down, but just champion each other when we're brave enough to give it a go. You know, I feel so lucky to speak to some of these really amazing, successful women who are doing beautiful things in the world. And what I love about these conversations is the humanness in all of us, you know, the struggles with our self-doubt or navigating children, work, all the things. I think we're all doing the best we can. And it's really beautiful to see, I think, the honesty and the hustle sometimes that goes on behind the scenes, but also the beautiful joy and how rewarding it is to be authentically you and to follow what you love. Yeah, I was really touched by this episode.
Thanks for sharing this time with me. You can find my book, Own Your Story, at bookshops or listen to the audiobook on Audible. I even read it myself. You can stay connected with Humans Being on Instagram, Facebook or YouTube. We love to hear from you, so please leave a comment, question or contemplation. And visit my website, laylstone.com.au, where you'll find heaps of great resources and courses for you to explore. This podcast is produced by Nigel Carboon, recorded by the crew at We Make Online Videos, and our original music is created by Josh Reed. Humans Being is produced on the lands of the Bunurong and Wadawurrung people. We pay respect to their unique and diverse cultures and to elders past, present, and future. Until next time, stay connected and don't forget to be human.